ready to go. Ready to go. And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show, Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. The time is 9.07, currently at our downtown studios, corner of Washington Street and North 3rd Street, fair skies and 20 degrees. Real quickly, I have to say good morning again, across the glass, our producer, engineer, Ian Welsh. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
And happy to welcome into studio Marathon County Board Supervisor, former mayor of Wausau, former state representative, right? State representative.
That's correct.
Man about town, John Robinson. John, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's different. Last time you were here, we were at the old place. It was just me. Don't have a guy across the glass. What do you think? The new digs?
Nice new digs. It's nice. It's a lot brighter and not as small. And
got the folks can walk right by and say hello to us. And very, very good. But glad to have you on board. Haven't talked to you in a while. Wanted to get an update on what is going on within the Marathon County Board. And I said, hey, what's going on? You talked first the budget. I have a question about the budget before you go into some of the details. Because obviously last year we were talking about how things could change based on having, the shared revenue changes in the state budget that was passed last year. Did you find a significant change in what you and the other members of the county board had to deal with having an increased amount of shared revenue? Was there a major change because of what happened in Madison last summer?
No, there wasn't. Pure and simple. We were playing catch up, I think, from previous years. And while we appreciate the increase in the shared revenues that were there, there were a lot of other pressures, and the shared revenue for the county went up from 5.7 million to 7.3 million. But some of that dealt with inflation, and a good amount of that money went to deal with issues at North Central Healthcare Center. Mm. And so we were playing catch up with some programs and funding of some programs. But there were a number of process changes in the budget last year that hopefully in the long term will reap some benefits. We tried to get the entire county board involved in the budget priorities early on, and we, in March of last year, conducted a budget 101 for the county board to go through the budget, what makes up the budget, what are the revenue sources, what are the various programs, and then we asked all of the standing committees to review the departments under their purview. For instance, the infrastructure would look at the highway department and the information technology department. The public services would look at the sheriff's department, jails, DAs, and others. But to look at five-year spending patterns, what are the revenues and fees, what changes should be made, what priorities should change, and other things. We didn't see a lot of change. We looked at mandated versus non-mandated programs, and a lot of the non-mandated programs are very popular with the public, and some of the mandated programs have a limited degree of mandate and others, but we try to get them involved in the development of priorities and assumptions and other things. At the end of the day, we probably had pretty close to a status quo budget, but the shared revenue increases from the state were important. But we also had decreases in highway aid. Hmm. So, you have to look at the budget as a whole. And at the end of the day, it was we were able to give our employees a 3%, provide for a 3% wage increase. It'll be distributed based on performance evaluations and other things. But it was there were no real innovative programs, and we're just trying to get by. Wisconsin continues to have some of the most restrictive levy limits in the country in terms of how much we can increase the levy on the local level. And we had some made some commitments to North Central Healthcare relative to debt and servicing debt there, and that was built into the budget. But it was a status quo budget.
Couple of things. You mentioned getting the entire board involved. For folks out there who may not be familiar, how many people are on the board right now for Marathon County?
There are 38. We are the largest county board in the country. We are the second largest governing body for counties in the country. The Albany, New York county, they have a county legislature of 39 members. Dane County is at 37, so we're not that much bigger than the others. But in many parts of the country, they have commissions where there may be 3 or 5 or 7 commissioners. It depends upon whether you went with the New York model or the Pennsylvania model. We studied that a few years ago, and for a long period of time, I had been an advocate for reducing the size of government or the county board, and we were looking at 21. I was active and chaired that task force, and we looked at a number of factors. What do other counties do? What are the differences? And ultimately, we made a recommendation to stay where we're at. And there were a few reasons. One were the times. It was during the pandemic, and there was a lot of distrust of government. But secondly, by being at 38 members, we allowed a lot of individuals that would otherwise not have had a chance to be involved in elected office. Allison Leahy, Ling Zhong and Ka Lo and others. And if you reduce the size, you might disenfranchise or limit their ability to be on and contribute. And I think the thought that we could involve and invite others to participate is a strength. There are times when 38 members is too many, and it makes it difficult and awkward. But you have to balance that with do you want to give others an opportunity to participate in a democracy?
And along that line, when you say to get those 38 members involved, make sure they're all involved in this budget process, how difficult was that and how successful was it? Because you said this was something that was tried to be done. Do you feel like that the 38 members became better, they understood maybe better the issues involved in the budget? Because I think a lot of folks, when they do first run for office, they have the idea, hey, I want to be somebody that's going to be a budget hawk or, along those lines. And then you get in there and you get the stacks and stacks and stacks of information. How did that go? Do you feel more confident as a member of this board that everybody was involved and understood the issues better?
They certainly had an opportunity to learn and be more involved and have a better understanding. The number of amendments offered to the budget when it came to the county board was down, which means that they did take it seriously. We had some carve-outs. We asked the committees to look at the nonprofits, the funding for nonprofits that we're engaged in, and all the committees came back and supported the role of nonprofits. So I think that there was an opportunity to look and evaluate the role that a United Way 211 program has, or the North Central Community Action Programs, housing assistance, or some of the other women's community and some of the work that they do, the work of the Historical Society. So there was a much better understanding of what those services are, how they relate to the county's mission. And so it was a good process, and it's something we can build upon for the future.
Were those, and I think that list you just gave of some of those organizations that are so vitally important, do you feel like it was a successful budget in terms of those organizations?
Those organizations all received the same level of funding in 2024 as they had in 2023. So I think from that perspective, we didn't have the major fights over them, questioning why are they there. I think there was a growing and better understanding of the need for partnerships, and that the county can't do it alone, and that there are some people in the private or in the nonprofit area that can provide a service that is of value to the citizens. So I think that was a plus out of that process.
This is going to be maybe a little bit off the beaten path question when you talk about the partnership aspect. When you look at, I'm going to take kind of a big picture look at where the country has gone over the last 4 decades or so, and there's this idea that there's a lot more super wealthy. Is there a sense that some of these organizations need to almost hook up with the super wealthy. In that, again, maybe I'm off on this, but I think the tax policy, the inheritance tax changes and all that, that there's an idea that there's more super wealthy out there. And I don't know whether or not here in our communities, in Marathon County, we have those super wealthy or not. Is that the sense that government needs to be less involved in some of those areas? I know that's an odd question. But
well, I think that there are those that question what the role of government should be, the whole issue of mandated versus non-mandated programs. And I would hope that people would look at it from the perspective of we have a mission to serve and how do we best go about that. And, you know, whether it's social services, there are some required programs, and there's some programs that through an investment actually save us dollars. If we can keep families together, it reduces the amount of people that are placed in foster homes that are expensive. So I think you have to look at the issue in the context of, does the county or do county board members necessarily say that this is a rural government, or should we look to the super wealthy to support it? I don't sense that that's there. You know, I think that we look again for those partnerships. And over the last 2 years, you saw the development of the Community Partners Campus, housing Catholic Charities for the homeless, the Neighbors Place for those people in need of support with food and the other programs that come together. The county's a part of that building. We're renting space for the health department, North Central Healthcare, and others to try to provide better services and coordinated services so that ultimately we can bring people to the next step and help them move out of poverty or receive the care, attention, and services that they need. So I think there is a role, and the beauty of the Community Partners Campus is that was funded by the community.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those wealthy people came forward and put in a significant amount of money to make that possible.
We're talking to Marathon County Board Supervisor John Robinson. We're going to come back in 90 seconds and talk more about what is happening on the county board. The time is 9:18. Chad Holmes with you here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 at 12:30. And welcome back, Chad Holmes, along with John Robinson, Marathon County Board Supervisor. We're talking a bit about the budget. When you looked at the budget, was there anything disappointing to you in terms of what you were fighting for in terms of, it's like, I wish I could have been able to get more people on my side, that concerns you maybe in some way?
Well, and I think some of us had been advocating for more attention and investment in energy saving approaches, and I think that's something we're going to work on a long-term basis. But can we make our facilities more energy efficient and therefore carbon neutral? And that didn't receive the attention that I had hoped it would in the budget, and hopefully we can deal with that in the future. And we were fortunate this last budget to have not the big increases in energy costs, but I think if we have opportunities to take advantage of some of the federal tax credits for energy investments in solar power and others to make our buildings cheaper to operate, I think that would be a good thing. That was the one disappointment for me personally.
I'm going to throw it out there that there is a sense that the Marathon County Board is a very conservative body. Energy savings does not seem to be something that concerns them. Is that basically what happened?
I'm not so sure it was a decision of the county board as much as it was. There were so many things on the table for administration that it didn't get it. We continue to work with administration, and we'll continue to push for some of those changes. I think there is a skepticism on the part of some relative to whether or not climate change or the need to address those policies needs to take place in the county level. But I would argue that if your utility costs are going up, you know, 10-15% as they did between 2022-23, it makes sense for you to look at every opportunity to reduce the your cost and reduce the terms and the kilowatts and other things. It's just good business. And it's a sustainable practice, and it's good for the environment. So I would hope that, and quite honestly, while the board may have become conservative, we also recognize the need to do that by to address it in where there are benefits, selling the gas from the landfill to a new vendor. So we have taken steps to address the issue and realize potential income associated with the generation of that alternative gas.
Every penny counts, basically, what you've been talking about since we first started talking. And you've been also very good, I remember last year, in terms of breaking down for me in terms of where the money goes. Where does the money go with the budget? Because we talked about, you know, different areas. Well, I guess for folks out there, for them, where do the biggest chunks of the county budget go in what areas?
So when you look at the budget, we've got a almost $203 million budget, so we're a large one. Public safety, the Sheriff's Department jail is one of the largest single ones. The highway department, you know, 16%+. You know, we've health department, social services, providing those support for the courts and general government, while the district attorneys are state employees, the support for them comes from the county, as is the clerk of courts and many of the diversion programs. And so when you look at it, you know, police or the sheriff's department is there, the jail, juvenile corrections, social services, highway, probably in about that order. And then we've got, you know, parks, rec, and other things. But a quarter of our budget comes from the property tax. The other comes from other sources. So mm-hmm. we try to look at how do we manage the state and federal grants? How do we look at fees? I think they're one of the things we asked the standing committees to do last year is to take a look at the fee structure to make sure that it was adequate and you know, appropriate. And there we'll continue to do that.
What'd you find out there? I'm curious, because I mean, fees are something that I hits citizens, and it's and again, in order to get the services that we want, we have to have the fees as well. What'd you find out there? I'm kind of curious about that.
I think it depended upon which department you were looking at. There were certain departments. The health department had, on a regular basis, been looking at the licensing fees for bars, restaurants, and other mm-hmm. things, and they had kept that up. Others, you know, took a good look at it and raised the fees, you know, to make sure that they were covering as much of the cost as possible. And there, the downside of raising fees is do you price the service out of where some people can't afford it. And I think we were trying to be careful with that, but hopefully we'll get into a systematic review if we've made a decision that this is a fee-based service, that we can at least cover as much of the cost as we can to avoid shifting it to the property tax. And the problem with the levy limits, we talked about the most restrictive levy limits in the country. Mm-hmm. If we can't look to other sources of funds, and if we don't get increases in highway aids and other things, we have to either cut back services or look at a different way of doing it. The beauty of the shared revenue change that took place last year is that there's a sharing of the growth. The state dedicated 1 cent of the 5 cents sales tax for local units of government. So there should be an inflation component, whereas for many, many years, the shared revenue payments were stagnant or went down for many communities. So hopefully there'll be some growth coming forward from the state in sharing, truly sharing the revenue and a percent of the sales tax as the economy grows, which was a plus. But we can't get by without fees. And the question is where are they appropriate and where, you know, I've always been concerned with growing up, swimming pools, we were paying 10, 15 cents. Well, right. My dad was unemployed one summer, and that 10, 15 cents in the 1960s was a lot of money, and it precluded our family from going to the pool. So I fought when I got on the city council in the 1970s to get rid of the fees in order to expand access. And I think we have to be careful that, because you can price people out of utilizing a service.
And the whole idea of progressive and regressive. I mean, in a sense where that's part of the study, it sounds like, where you figure out, okay, we don't want to put a fee in that ultimately is going to, you know, hurt us more than it helps us. I mean, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? And it, and also, it doesn't hurt people more than it helps us.
Right. So, well, I think those are the balancing criteria that have to be factored in. But we, you know, we have a lot of fees that are associated with, you know, new driveway permits or other things. And those are directly associated with the development of new properties. And if we've got a cost and we can pass those on, and it is truly based upon that development, we should try to recover those costs.
I imagine that list of fees is very interesting to look at.
It is. I mean, and the administration did a very good job of compiling it. And I think as the members get more comfortable with it, there will be a more thorough evaluation going forward.
Interesting. We have to take a news update here, find out what's going on. Of course, the vice president visiting Wisconsin, Terry Bell, will have more on that. Mike Clemens will have a sports update. We'll have a weather forecast update as well. And then back with more with John Robinson coming up. The time is 9:28. I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Monday edition of the Chad Holmes Show, Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. And welcome back. Chad Holmes with you here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. BullFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Again, joined in studio by John Robinson, Marathon County Board Supervisor. Real fast, you're unopposed in the election, correct?
Yes.
How do you, and because we were just talking about democracy, a couple of pronged questions here. As somebody running for office, how do you look at it when you're running unopposed? Is it something that you're happy about, that you don't have to worry about an election? But on the other hand, showing that so many races are unopposed, whether it's county board or city council or other races, how do you look at that?
Well, you're always happy if you're unopposed, but is it good for democracy? Probably not. And you don't have the dialogue and the discussion of the policy issues. And that would be helpful if you can get those discussions to take place. I think there's been just a growing trend of less and less people wanting to be in elected office, or number of people that are in office leaving office because of how it's changed and how the public interacts with them, and the arbitrariness is in the litmus test and how polarized we've become, and that makes it difficult to govern. And sometimes the issues that are advanced by a small minority who perceive themselves to be the majority become difficult to deal with, and not always. They don't advance the interest of the county or the citizens of the county, but rather make that small group feel good.
Let me ask you, because I think there's been a sense from a lot of Americans that there is a dysfunction in Washington when it comes to the House and the Senate. And even if you look here in Madison, where you have, I think some people feel as though folks such as Robin Voss have a disproportionate power in a lot of ways. How would you compare county board in terms of how it works as a governmental body, in terms of, you know, you, as we've talked about, it's not a surprise that it's a rather conservative body, but do you think that when the folks do get together that it works better than, say, because there's thought that the best government is the government closest to the people? Does, in your experience, have you seen that to be true?
Well, I think it depends upon the issue and the timing and other things. Obviously, we're nonpartisan. That doesn't mean that there aren't philosophical differences among people. But we've had significant turnover in the county board, both in the last election. We're likely to see significant turnover this time. So you don't have institutional knowledge that can be good and bad. People need to learn about government and understand their role. Mm-hmm. A good number of people see their role as being operational, and that's not the role of a county board. It is setting policy to drive the organization and the county into the future. So there's that educational component. That's, when you have the constant turnover, you many times inadvertently turn over control to administration and others because you're not focusing on those policy discussions. And the continuity and the institutional knowledge is the power that drives many of the decisions. So stability and longer term is not necessarily bad.
Real quick, when you look at what's happening in Madison, do you miss being a part of that at all?
Absolutely not. It's interesting. While you have one party in control of the legislature, there are significant differences between the Assembly and the Senate. Yes, and it's almost like, you're negotiating with Robert DeVos or Mark Lyon or others, and they don't see eye to eye. And it's difficult, and I don't sense that it's necessarily an inclusive process where all voices and issues are presented at the table where there's a good discussion. I think it's, well, we're going to do this or we're not going to do this because of the political consequences. It's always been there, but I think it's much more pronounced now than it was in the 80s.
You mentioned when we were talking about the percentages, the pie of where the budget money goes, about the sheriff's department and the jail. And obviously, there's been noticeable that at times where prisoners are sent elsewhere because of lack of staffing and whatnot. Where do we stand with that right now? And how do you look at that?
Well, first of all, I think that the current administration, Chad Billups, and before that Scott Parks, were really concerned about the number of inmates and how do we deal with them. And it was the issue was compounded with COVID, and how do you deal with them? Right. How do you isolate them and other things? But we've had an ongoing issue with trying to recruit and retain corrections officers. People we need 24/7. People who work 24/7, and a lot of people don't want to work that third shift or weekends, and it makes it difficult. And as a result, we've had to, in many cases, look at moving inmates outside of the community, which is not good for connections with the family, but it's necessary in order to keep them housed. I think one of the things that took place during the pandemic is we evaluated who's in the jail and why are they there and are there alternatives that are there. And I think we've done a good job at trying to identify some of those. And we had a significant reduction in the daily census, but we are housing people out of the county. It would be ideal to have them all here. I don't think it would be ideal if we had to build a new jail or expand a jail. I think that's costly and very expensive to maintain and would be difficult for us to be able to afford. So I think the critical issue is, are we looking at what services we're providing to the people in the jails to keep them from recidivizing or coming back? Are there programs in the community? Are the people appropriately placed in the jail? How do, the jail is a housing place many times for people awaiting trial and or sentencing to prison. How can we get some process improvements that lead to more timely trials and more quickly moving them onto prison? And the prisons obviously have some issues, as we've all heard. But I think Sheriff Billups has done an exceptional job of trying to balance those and manage those issues. Excuse
me. Got this tickle in my throat I can't get rid of. Something we've talked about in the past, broadband. You've been very involved in that. Any update?
Well, there's a big pot of money through the Broadband Equity and Deployment Program. $42 billion available nationwide, a little over a billion will be spent in the state of Wisconsin. We're trying to position ourselves to capture as much of that as we can. We still have significant portions of Marathon County that are unserved or underserved. Unserved means less than 25 megabytes down and 10 up, and underserved is 100 megabytes down and 20 up. So we're trying to identify where areas of need are and position ourselves to work with the internet service providers to try to get successful applications. So we currently have a number of applications before the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. There was $42 million available last year, and Charter or Spectrum submitted a grant application for a portion of that, and Frontier submitted a number of applications. So we're waiting. We should know in February whether or not those areas in the western part of the county will be served. But we have hired Aaron Andrews to work on the issues over the next year plus to try to get a better understanding of where some of the gaps are. We continue to rely on maps generated by the Federal Communication Commission or the Public Service Commission that show levels of service that are wrong. So we are looking at challenging those maps to make sure that that when we go in for a grant application, that we're trying to serve as much of the county as possible.
Partnerships. And I know that when we talked last year, when it came to broadband, that one of the biggest problems is that you needed that buy-in from the internet service providers. Is it better now than it was when we talked last year, or is it not?
It is definitely better. When we started looking at how do we approach things in the county level, whether it was in 2008 or in 2015-16 or even in 2020, the interest of the internet service providers to partner with the county was somewhat limited. They prefer to do it their way. They didn't want to share a lot of information. That has changed as the amount of dollars available through the Public Service Commission or the Federal Communication Commission have increased, and there's now a desire to work with counties, and that's a good thing. And we've got a number of players, Serenity or Wittenberg Telephone, Bug Tussle, Charter, Spectrum, Frontier, and TDS, and others that are doing a lot relative to expanding service. There are other providers, and we'll work with any provider to try to address the needs of the residents. But we've got a short window this year. They'll be awarding the $100 billion, and we need to be positioned to capture as much of that as we can for the residents of the county.
You mentioned roads before, and you mentioned early about how that was one of the areas where maybe the funding was a shortfall in terms of from the state. Where do we stand with roads within our county? Because that's always one thing that people notice very quickly about the roads, big chunk used within the county. How would you generally say the roads are right now?
I think we're holding our own on relative to roads. The money we get from the state through the highway aids formula is general transportation aids, and it's based upon a 6-year rolling average of how your expenses compare to other units of government. And we've been not keeping pace with inflation, but there have been a number of other programs as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law and others that have resulted in dollars coming in. So we've been able to deal with some projects such as Highway K last year. I think that there were several million dollars of federal money that went into that project. And so Jim Griesbach and his crew do a very good job of trying to search those programs out and submit applications, but we're just not getting the money to maintain it. We rely on what's called a PACER rating, a pavement assessment program, and we try to have 10 being good, 1 being very poor. We try to have an average score of 7 on our roads, and that kind of drives the spending on the part of the county. We're doing a good job of keeping it there. We have a large number of bridges that we just have to make sure that we're staying on top of those and replacing those in a timely manner and avoiding having them posted. But I think overall we're holding our own.
It's interesting because you mentioned the bipartisan infrastructure law. Infrastructure is something you're always chasing, isn't it? I mean, it really is something that, and I wanted to ask you, because you've been around government for such a long time, when you look at a law like that, was that a successful law? Because now we've seen it for a couple of years where they've been putting the money in to a lot of these projects. As somebody that's been around government for a long time, would you call that it's been a successful program that was put through the Congress and signed by the president?
It assisted in dealing with a part of the backlog, not all of it. So there continues to be, you know, the problem was with the road. The road is new for a year or two.
Yeah.
And then you're maintaining it, and then you're patching it. And if you get into an effective maintenance program, you can extend the lives of the road. The problem is that the dollars aren't always there to let you chip seal or do an overlay, and therefore the life of the road may go down. In addition, in Marathon County and some of our county roads, we have a good number of the roads that are not all season, which means they've got road limits, which if you're involved in agriculture or if you're a business relying on that road to move product, you may have a portion of the year where you can't use that road. I think one of the things that we need to do a better job of is trying to identify which roads should be all season roads. The cost to upgrade them is significant. Mm. And so we have some challenges out there that, you know, are the bridges able to support the weight? Are the roads able to support it? And we need to do a better job of identifying those. We've been working on a plan for try to identify our needs through 2050 for the department, modeled after what Washington County had done. I think we need to finalize that and make sure that we're making the investments. What's happened in the past is we'll work on the budget, and just about when the budget is done, we'll get the general transportation aids, and it'll be a cut. We had one year where they were going to cut $195,000 from the highway department. Well, the first response of the administrator then, Brad Carger, was, well, we'll cut the highway spending. I said, no, we're not, because that'll
affect
us.
Hold the thought. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in. Chad Holmes with you here on Bow Falls Radio. The time is 9:50. Again, with Marathon County Supervisor John Robinson. And I hate when we come to that heartbreak and you're in the middle of a thought. Please continue your talk. Again, and the roads is such a big item. Please continue your thought.
So we're talking about general transportation aid from the state of Wisconsin and how that impacts our budget. And we've developed the budget, and it's based on assumptions, and many times right before the budget is finalized, we'll get the updated estimates for the following year. And one year we received $195,000 less between the preliminary and the final. And the first response was, well, we'll cut highway spending by $195,000. And I opposed that, and the reason was, it's a six-year average. So if you're losing money and you cut another $195,000 of spending, it will impact you for the next 6 years. And so you'll get in the spiral where you'll go down, and you won't. The state is committed to pledge 30%. We're at under 20% of funding for county roads, and we need to look at it and develop a plan that will try to maximize the level of state participation going forward. And that's a 2050 plan that we talked about before the break. But you know, in addition to just highways, we need a better plan for the county. You asked earlier what disappointed me. We're supposed to have a five-year capital plan, and we really don't. And so one of the things we're working on this year is developing and formalizing a five-year capital plan so we can see what the expenditures are for the various buildings and other projects, and you can build highway into that so you've got a better short, long-term view of where your expenditures are, and that could be a significant improvement to the budget process.
And that's going
to
be one of the hard aspects of the job that you and others are doing, is there's always going to be these, when you're looking at it, you got this year. You got to look at this year, but it makes everything, it theoretically makes it a lot easier if you do have that plan, because then you're looking ahead 3, 4, 5 years. You have that idea where it's not going to come up 4 years from now, and then all of a sudden you're put again behind the eight ball when it comes to trying to balance a budget.
Well, the advantage of having that plan is it allows you to move projects into different fiscal years to minimize the impact on the property tax levy and to maximize or minimize bonding, however you want to look at it. But it gives you the ability to truly prioritize. You'll always have those unforeseens. A roof goes out and needs repair, or some other critical issue comes up, a bridge deteriorates quicker than you thought. But it at least gives you a better planning tool to allow you to even out the expenditures over a long period of time. And administration is committed to do that. And Administrator Leonard and Deputy Administrator Holman are working on developing that plan. And hopefully it'll result in better decision-making processes and prioritization going forward.
Last year, there was a lot of talk about libraries and books and funding. Has that been bubbling up again, or has that calmed down?
Well, it continues to bubble up, and I think that the people that want to, that are concerned about the books, have now changed their tax and their tactics, and they're looking at who's on the library board and have supported or opposed appointments to the library board based upon the philosophy. The problem is we have to balance that with the Constitution and the First Amendment rights, and it isn't always black and white. There are gray, and while the library budget per se wasn't challenged this year, there were discussions on that, and there were at one time discussions about whether or not to invest in the new chiller system or the HVAC system at the library. Those never came out as issues, but the underpinnings were there, and there continues to be a strong push or concern on the part of others that maybe if we can't get our books banned, we should cut the library spending, which I oppose.
We have about 3.5 minutes left, and I know there's always things that are important to you to talk about. What have we missed so far in this hour that we need to talk about here in the last few minutes?
Well, I think there are a number of things that will be coming before the county board. You know, what is our policy on child care? How do we assist in housing? How do we deal with the mental health and drug abuse needs of those people that interface with the corrections department? I chaired the WASA Policing Task Force, and we made some recommendations relative to expansion of the crisis assessments response team into evenings and weekends. And we just haven't had the money, and I'm hopeful that we can in the future continue to evaluate the need for that program and the support for that program so that officers have the support they need from mental health professionals in dealing with those people when they make contact. We need to figure out what the role of counties are or is relative to addressing the housing shortage and the child care shortage that are impacting our attractiveness and our ability to bring in new talent. And public-private partnerships ought to be explored. And we had a resolution on housing that was adopted, encouraging us to look at other things, such things as tax-delinquent property that the county's taken title to. Can we use that for housing expansion, and what's our role? And we're looking, later this week, we'll have a meeting on what's the county's role in child care. And if we can expand child care services for our own employees, that is critical. We can hopefully free up some spots for other people, but child care is very expensive, and the number of child care providers has decreased, and there's a critical need.
There's so many different areas that do lead to the retention of talent, isn't there? I mean, that's the thing that kind of jumps out when you talk about child care. You can talk about housing. You can talk about so many other areas that are part of what's a nationwide issue right now, isn't it?
It is, and some counties are doing a very good job of addressing those issues, and others have put their heads in the sand. I think those that do a good job of addressing it will be the winners long-term on the ability to attract and retain talent, and those that don't will suffer the consequences. So the question is, where will the county be? I think there's a willingness on the part of everyone to talk about the issues. The question is, what policies can we do? We have counties are limited by the state statutes and the Constitution on what we can do. We're not like cities where they have more home rule authority, so we have to operate within the statutes in our power, but we have the ability to partner and look for innovative approaches.
John Robinson, Marathon County Supervisor, appreciate you spending the hour with us talking about these county issues. Again, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tomorrow we'll have Mayor Katie Rosenberg on in the second hour, so hopefully you'll be able to join us then. Coming up next, after a news, weather, and sports update, it's Matt and Air on Air. So keep it right here. Have a great Monday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Chad Holmes, Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230.